last time, first I have to say it's nice to be back. And I, God willing, other than perhaps Shavuos is the next one, I don't know, Shavuos, except Shavuos we wouldn't have Shir anyway, so I think my schedule is such until 1 week after Pesach, until this exception 1 week after Pesach, I should be here. So the traveling, I think, is mostly done. Last time we had Shir, we started exploring the issue of what's called Recha Milsahi. What is the status of smell in an oven? And the case that the Gemara had was, if you cook nevela meat and you cook treif meat in the same oven, and the Gemara quotes a machlokas Rav and Levi. Rav says that even if the kosher meat is the juicy meat and the non-kosher meat is lean, you know, not juicy, still there's a flavor exchange through the air. In other words, normally we might have assumed that the juicy part would, in effect, spice up, would be mefatem, the non-juicy thing, but here the Gemara says they do an exchange. First the juicy thing makes the non-juicy thing juicy, and then it can exchange flavors. That's the way Rav presents it. And Levi says the exact opposite. Levi says that it doesn't matter, even if the kosher meat is lean and the treif meat is juicy, it is still mutter. Rashi, as quoted by Tosos, makes a claim that is only b'di'evet. That's only post facto, but l'chatchila, you're not allowed to cook them in the same oven at the same time. I can't find that in our Rashi, but that seems to be the sort of the accepted position. Now, in the Gemara we looked at, and then we're going to start reading from the Rith, but this was what we did last time on the other side of the sheet, the Gemara Psachim. So we encountered a couple of stages in the Gemara. The first stage in the Gemara was a brisa that spoke about roasting two Karbanos Pesach together in the same oven. And the catch with the Karban Pesach is that you're not allowed to eat from someone else's Karban Pesach, even though they can eat from it. You're only allowed to eat from the Pesach which you are Memuna on, and you can only be Memuna on one Pesach. You can switch sometimes, but you can't be Memuna at one time on two different Karban Pesach, so there's no way any one person is allowed to eat from two Karban Pesachs. So based upon that brisa, the Gemara worked out, it sounded as if Recha was Lav Milsahi, wasn't like Levi, that Reach, at least B'di'evit, is not a problem. The Gemara came up with a very forced answer to defend Rav's position. At the end of the Sugya, the Gemara quoted two different Amoraim in practice. One of them, both of them, who had something that was roasted with meat in an oven, and both of them said, you're not allowed to eat that food with milk, with kutcha, which is like a yogurt, sour yogurt dip. One of them, interestingly enough, and we spoke about this very briefly, was meat that was roasted, fish that was roasted in an oven with meat. And the Gemara, after stating that a certain Amora said that you can't eat it with milk, went on to say, not only can you not eat it with milk, you can't eat it with salt. I mean, you can't eat the fish at all, because there's sakana. There's a danger in eating fish and meat that were roasted together in the same oven. We spoke about that briefly at the end of last year. That belongs to a different topic, the question of fish and meat together. But for our purposes, the relevant part was the Amora initially prohibited, and even in the end, prohibited certainly consuming that fish, the materials that were cooked or baked in the oven with the meat at the same time, prohibited eating that with milk. So it sounds from that, the Gemara doesn't comment. It doesn't say this is a proof for one position, or since it's Amoraim, it wouldn't prove anything, but it doesn't say that they held like this one, they didn't hold like that one. The Gemara just presents the two stories. And on the surface, at least, the Gemara presents, in effect, two conflicting opinions as to how we might paskin like Rav or like Levi. The first brisa, which required quite an effort in order to make it work for Rav, would suggest that really we should paskin like Levi. And that's a general rule. Whenever the Gemara has brises and proofs against one particular position, and the Gemara is able to answer them, but the answers are dochak, they're kind of forced, so then we tend to say, the Rishonim tend to paskin against that position, unless there's a compelling reason to do otherwise. So on the one hand, that first brisa about roasting two Karbanos Pesach in the same oven, and the way the Gemara understood and dealt with the brisa would suggest that we should paskin like Levi, that Recha Lav Milsahi, that the smell is not considered taste, it's not a problem in terms of consuming the food. Yet, the two stories of the Amoraim at the end of the Gemara would suggest that no, that in fact these two Amoraim, without that the Gemara stating explicitly, they prohibited consuming foods baked in the oven together with meat. They prohibited consuming those foods with milk. And that would suggest that these later Amoraim were paskening, were following Rav Shita. And as a general rule in Psak, Rishona will point to what's called Maisa Rav. When you have not just a theoretical position, but you have somebody actually paskin that way, so then you might argue that that's proof that we in fact should paskin like that particular position. Interestingly enough, in the story, when the Gemara presents Rav's opinion and Levi's opinion, after it presents both opinions in the abstract, it says that Levi Avad Uvda, Levi actually did this lemaisa, not just the theoretical position, in a case where meat had been cooked with pork in the same oven, and he permitted the consumption, obviously, of the meat, not the pork, because Levi really held the Vashita. It wasn't just a theoretical, abstract opinion, it really should be okay, but I wouldn't actually do it. No, Levi actually paskin that way. Now, I don't know that we could call that Maaseh Rav, because if Levi is the one who held that position, and then Levi did that way, okay, that's not a great shock. We generally like it that when Rabbanim adopt a particular position, they actually do that for themselves as well. It's not, the Rav who's Machshir the Aver but won't carry, and it leaves you a little bit suspicious. Okay. Now, so the truth is the Gemara Psachim has conflicting mashmaos, although I would argue that if you read the last two stories, Kipshutan, that these two Amoraim would not eat the stuff roasted with meat in milk, it would suggest that the Gemara that was passing like Rav. And if you only had the Gemara in Psachim, I suspect that we would probably paskin like Rav, that Recha Milsehi. Now, there are a lot of details that have to be worked out as well, because even for the Rishonim who say we paskin like Rav, there are a couple of very, very important situations that apply, conditions that apply pretty much to all of our ovens, that would suggest, at least b'dieved, a completely different outcome. Number one is the question of the size of the oven, and the question number two is whether the oven is open at all. And our ovens, generally speaking, are vented. And therefore, it might very well be that even if you paskin like Rav, as the Balei Tosfos will, that our ovens might be a different story. It also doesn't take into consideration two other very, very important questions. Number one, if you paskin like Levi, that Recha Lav Milsehi, at least after the fact, is that true when it comes to Isurei Hana'ah or only to Isurei Achila? In other words, what if we're dealing with a situation where the food in question is not like nevela, where you're not allowed to eat it, where you might say that recha la milsehi, recha is not tam. So when you eat the kosher meat, it's not as if you're eating from the non-kosher meat. But what if you're dealing with isurei hana'ah, things that are prohibited in getting any hana'ah, any benefit from, in which case the standard of benefit may not be tam. Even a smell, a nice smell attached to the food, even if you don't consider that tam, perhaps that would be a problem. The situation where this question is most material is in Pesach. And the Balei Tosfos will talk about that as well. What happens on Pesach? And the truth is, if you hold like Levi, in theory, you shouldn't need to kasher an oven for Pesach, unless Isurei Hana'ah are somehow different. We'll talk about that, but eventually. But that's one question that emerges. Okay. So, everything would be very nice and fine, and we probably would have paskin like Rav. I'm sorry, there was one other thing. The other question, of course, is, this is talking about roasting or baking two things in one oven at the same time. It would suggest, which is certainly, almost certainly the Psak of the Shulchan Aruch, there were some Achronim who, Moshe had a novel Shita, but that would suggest that baking them or cooking them or roasting them in the same oven consecutively is not a problem at all. Which, in fact, really would seem to be the case. So we'll come back to that eventually as well. But that obviously is extremely important to halacha lemaisa. Today, a lot of people have two ovens. A lot of people have two sinks too, which is actually rather convenient if you don't put your dishes away, immediately wash them or stick them in the dishwasher. But lots and lots of very erlich yidden, 50, 60 years ago, when we were a less affluent community, had one sink and had one oven. And so, granted, there may be some things you can work around it, but lots and lots of, from yidden really didn't have a problem with it, and neither really does the Shulchan Aruch, but we'll eventually come to talk about the oven issue as well, in practice, in terms of consecutive. But right now we're talking about baking or roasting two things at the same time. Yes?
Do you have to read Levi so that Reach is an issue with could be an issue with annul. Like, could it be that he's annulling the idea that Ruach doesn't exist? Or is the question, is it impactful?
So if I'm not mistaken, the Balei HaTosfos here, we will see eventually, not today, who say that it is a problem by Isurei Hanul, and they're actually motivated by some other Gemaras. So if I recall correctly, in Shulchan Aruch, either the Mechaber or the Ramah quotes two deos as to whether Recha Milsa he is a problem when it comes to Isur Hametz. So my point is, you don't. In other words, there are Rishonim who say Levi applies across the board, Isur Echi and Isur Hena. And I know that because I know that the Shulchan Aruch quotes the second Shita. So no, you absolutely do not. Levi says Recha Lab Milsahi. The question is Recha Lab Milsahi mean Recha doesn't count at all, or that Recha is Batel B'Shishim?
Right.
So that's what the issue really depends on. When you see Tosus will formulate it exactly that way. That the idea is that for Levi, Reach is Batel, because it never rises the threshold of Shishim. But therefore, in situations where Shishim is insufficient, when it's insufficient to be Mevatel the Isser, so then even Levi would agree it would be a problem. Correct. Okay. So now what I want to do is to take a look at the Rif, and we'll spend probably all of today doing the Rif. Hopefully we'll finish it. I could recite to you the Rif's position in about 2 minutes, but I think that it actually illustrates beautifully how Rishonim engage in analysis of sugyas and doing what I would call the arithmetic or the breakdown of looking at individual pieces of a sugya and how they deal with it in order to arrive at a conclusion. It's very interesting. There's a book some of you have read, some of you mentioned to me, I'm supposed to speak on it later this week at a conference, called The Halacha by Professor Chaim Saman. It's a really, really interesting book. And, if you have a time that's neither day nor night, because I know everybody has lots of free time, I recommend reading the book. I've seen it almost as anthropology about the Beis Medrash community, if I can call that. But he's talking about the nature of Talmud Torah and the study of Jewish law versus a secular law. You know, how legal scholars in pretty much every other system of law, certainly in secular societies, how they approach it. And one of the things that occupies a prominent place in his thinking is how removed from halacha so much of Gemara and Torah study is. Meaning halachic Torah study is, I don't mean studying Agadah, but studying halacha is so removed from real life halacha. Now, the truth is, reading the Rif, of course, is not a representative sample, because the Rif, by definition, cut out everything out of the Gemara that wasn't halacha l'maisa. And I think that Professor Saman's approach to the study of Torah and Halacha, I think represents, and he would acknowledge this, it is not a ubiquitous, it's not universal, and it's a much more modern phenomenon, a product of the yeshiva movement of Eastern Europe. Amongst Sfardim, even till today, and certainly amongst the Rishonim, it's not that they're not also interested in the theory, it's not practical, but there's a very, very heavy practical bent. Even the Balei HaTosfos, who we might even describe as the first people who did Lamdus, if I can use that description in a certain way, even the Balei HaTosfos, we've seen the Maseches Avodah Zarah, you can see that floating in the background for them is always, how does this affect our lives, right? Some of the most novel points in Tosfos are really to explain and to justify communal practice, or thinking of what the ramifications are for communal practice. So the Rif here, obviously, is very much bottom-line focused, because that's all he does. But I think it's a wonderful example of seeing how Rishonim deal with a different kind, having to put the sort of the pieces of the puzzle together when sometimes it feels like you're getting conflicting signals in sugyos. Now, one comment I would also make, I don't think is technically applicable here, but it's a general methodological observation about how the Rishonim worked. The Gaonim and early Chachmei Sfarad, like Rif and the Rambam, Rabbeinu Hananel, when they encountered two Gemaras that seemed to conflict with one another, their general approach, it's not universal obviously, but their general approach was to assume that there was a machlokes hasugyos, that there were two different opinions being expressed here. We might say two different misadrim, two different editors of a particular sugya, a particular mesechta. And then they would choose to paskin like one. Because if you have a machlokes, you have to choose one or the other. That is not to say that they never resolve two gemaras and try to make them work hand in hand, but there is a much stronger tendency of seeing a machlokes between sugyos. The radical innovation, it's not so radical, and it wasn't such an innovation, but we tend to see it that way, of the Balei HaTosfos was to almost never find two sugyos that they couldn't reconcile somehow by making an ukimta, by saying, oh, this sugya is only in that case and the other sugya is another case. That is not to say the Baalei HaTosfos never, they have a term called sugyos mukhlafos, sugyos where it's clear you have a dispute between the two sugyos. They are not averse to seeing such a thing completely, but they have a very, very strong tendency of trying to resolve two sugyos. And historians have pointed out, like Jacob Katz, that they do the same thing when it comes to communal practice and the Gemara. When there's a conflict, they treat communal practice usually or often like a text, that, and if it contradicts the Gemara, you have to explain, ah, the Gemara is in this case, but we do it differently because of that case. In other words, it's the same, conceptually speaking, it's the same method. Obviously, both methods, the reconciling approach and the recognition of distinction exist in the Gemara, right? Sometimes the Gemara will quote a contradiction and the Gemara will make an ukimta, will say ha with X and ha with Y, and sometimes the Gemara will say pligi. Sometimes the Gemara will say in one Mishnah that the author of the first line is not the same opinion as the author in the second line. You know, tavra mishashana zo lo shana zo. You have such a thing, but as a general tendency, Chachmei Sfarad tend to see more variation, more conflict between sugyos, whereas Chachmei Ashkenaz are much more inclined to reconcile the two. And the truth is, Chachmei Ashkenaz have a profound influence later on Chachmei Sfarad. Now, starting with probably the Ramban, the method of the Baalei HaTosfos starts to exert a, again, it's not a switch where you turn, nothing happens that way. It's all a gradual process, but you start to see the influence of the Baalei HaTosfos, is what they call the dialectical method, on Chachmei Sfarad later. But the Rambam certainly still belong with the Rambam, and the Rif and Rabbeinu Hananel belong to the tradition, much to the tradition of the Gaonim, much more so. So the question now is, we're going to have two sugyos. Now, what's the issue with two sugyos? So we've discussed and reviewed now the Gemara and Psachim. But the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, which we haven't read yet, and for now we still don't have to read, deals with the Machlokas Rav and Abaye, where the Gemara uses the exact same terminology. And Rava says, Recha Lav Milsahi. The case that the Gemara has is as follows. They call it Bastiha. Apparently, sometimes you wanted an expert to sniff the wine in the barrel to determine whether it was good or not. So the Gemara says that if a goy can sniff the wine in the Jew's barrel, it's not a problem. We don't assume he's touching it or in any way coming in contact. Well, what about a Jew sniffing the wine that belongs to a goy? So there are two possible problems here. One which the Gemara is dealing with and one which the Baalei HaTosfos point out. Number one, when he smells it, maybe that's considered hana. Number two, even if he doesn't get physical hana from it, if the goy is paying him to smell it, then he's being mistaker b'surana. So the Baalei HaTosfos say it has to be a case where he's not paid for doing it. Okay. I would also say it has to go further. It has to be a goy that's not going to be machzik tova to you, like he now owes you a favor. It means the guy pulls a Jew off the street and said, here, can you do me a favor, buddy? Sniff this. And you'll never see him again, so you don't get any hana. They don't say that part, but you have to assume that, because hana, you know, social commerce, there are things that are gained not just in strict financial transactions. The social goodwill that has its benefits also. But the Gemara is focusing on the smell of smelling the wine itself. Is that constituted hana? Whether that recha is a milsahi or lav milsa. Abaye says recha milsahi, and Rava says recha lav milsahi. Now, then the Gemara goes on to have a discussion, and they quote one of the sources that's quoted in Psachim. I didn't mention this one before. We learned it last time, which is the Gemara talks about if you take bread and stick it on top of a barrel of truma wine. And the question is, does the wine vapor, or does the smell of the wine, get into the bread? And the Mishnah had presented a machlokes. Rabbi Meir said, problem. Rabbi Huda said, no problem. Rabbi Yose says, it depends upon whether it's wheat or barley. Because barley tends to absorb, tends to be showy, which the way some Rishonim say means it actually absorbs the liquid. Okay. Now, again, I should re-stipulate what I stated a few weeks ago, which is, I know that on a chemical level, the reason why you can smell something in a food is because molecules have made it in. That's why the Shishim theory works much better than saying Recha Lav Milsahi, because on a scientific level, maybe it doesn't matter here, smell is taste. It's just so much less in terms of the particulate matter. Now, the Gemara, so that on the surface, the Gemara points out that Brisa, that Mishnah in, I think, Trumos, appears to be this machlokas. Rabbi Meir says that the bread is now absorbed truma and a non-Kohen can't eat it. Rabbi Meir holds Recha Milsahi, and Rabbi Yehuda holds Recha Lav Milsahi. I'm going to leave aside Rabbi Yose's compromised position and what he holds. Different Mishnahim have different opinions. Then the Gemara goes on to say, so that certainly appears to be the machlokas, whether Reach counts or it doesn't count. The Gemara suggests suggests that Rav, who believes that Reach does count, that Reach mils Reach milsahi, Rav could say that all the opinions in that Mishnah agree with Rav. Because the Gemara quotes Enukimta in that Mishnah, that Mishnah is only talking about, that they say, the Enukimta is, I think it's Reish Lakish, that if the barrel's open and the bread is warm, everybody agrees it's Aser. And if the barrel is sealed and it's closed, everybody agrees it's mutter. And the machlokas is, if the bread is hot but the barrel is sealed, or the bread is cold but the barrel of wine is open right directly underneath it. And so what the Gemara assumes from that ukimta is that obviously everybody agrees reicha milsahi. The only question was whether reich gets in there or not. So when it's hot bread and it's on top directly of an open barrel of wine, everybody agrees that it absorbs from the reich and it's awesome. So you don't have to read the Mishnah that way, but that's what the Gemara says. Rav could read the Mishnah that way, in which case everybody would agree with Rav that Reicha Milsahi. Larry?
So there's no issue because of no seeing Tom with gone by Reach,
There should be, in theory. They don't. The Gemara, at least at this point, doesn't explore that. But I think the assumption would be that if it were Pogame, it could be no worse than real Tom. Yeah, I think that's correct. Now, that braisa that the Gemara brings and goes through the sort of the acrobatics of, oh, this is the machlokas Rav and Levi, or no, Levi would agree it has to be machlokas Hatanan, but Rav could say everybody agrees with me. The exact same Mishnah is brought here in Avodah Zarah for Rava and Abaye with the exact same shaklat attire. That Abaye would say everybody in the Mishnah could agree with me because the Mishnah only doesn't apply when it's hot bread on an open barrel. Hot bread on an open barrel, everybody agrees is Aser because Reicha Milsahi. And the only debate is over some other case. And Rava would say, no, it's a machlokas Satanaim, and I hold like Rabbi Yehuda. So it's the exact same shaklat attire that the Gemara has here that it has in Sachem essentially. Okay, so now we are faced with the Gemara with Msachim that has a machlokas Rav and Levi, where Rav says Reicha Milsahi, and in Avodah Zarah Abaye says Reicha Milsahi. In Msachim Levi says Reicha Lav Milsahi, and in Avodah Zarah Rava says Reicha Lav Milsahi. So now I ask you, how do we paskin? Well, when we have a machlokas Rav and Levi, how do we paskin? So the answer is, I don't know. Maybe sometimes we pass like Rav, sometimes we pass like Levi. But if you have a machlokas Rav and Abaye, how do you pass him? Well, unless it's one of the six cases of Yaal Kigam, and this is not one of them, then we should pass him like Rav. So if you're going to pass him like Rav, that Reicha Lav Milsahi, then you should pass him like Levi, Reicha Lav Milsahi. That would be very simple on the surface. Okay, so let's take a look now what the Rif has to say. And that's, by the way, Rashi says explicitly in Psachim. Rashi says that's the way we paskin. I believe he gives that reason explicitly. He says, even though the Tanoim here look more like Rav, he says, Hilchasa kivasei the Levi, because Abaye and Rava argue in Avodah Zarah, in our Sugya, and Rava holds like Levi Shita, and Abaye and Rava Hilchasa kirava. And he quotes a Tshuvas HaGaonim that way, and quotes one of, I assume, his Rabbein and Rabbi Lezer Ben Yitzchak. That's what Rashi says. Now, in effect, if that's how you're paskening, that is almost, not explicitly, but Rashi acknowledges that there really is something of a contradiction between the two sugyos. Because the sugya Psachim on its surface, taken alone, with the weight of the proofs for the most part, lean in the direction of paskening like Rav. And if all we had was the Gemara Psachim, we would have paskened like Rav. Yet the sugya in Avodah Zarah, by having Rav and Abaye presented in the fashion, mirroring that machlokas and Rav holding like Levi, would suggest that the sugya in Avodah Zarah would assume we possibly like Levi. And what Rashi has done here, and what the Rif and the Rambam will do, is they will pick one sugya over the other, and they happen to pick the sugya of Avodah Zarah, because the klal of psak that hilchosak Rava, except for Bayal Kagam. But fundamentally, in many ways, it's not quite an explicit stira, but it's an implied contradiction between these two sugyos. And the Rif does what you expect the Rif to do. And I should have said before, by the way, Rashi as well, maybe for different reasons, is not a Bal HaTosos. I know that's a funny expression. Rashi's obviously not one of the Bal HaTosos, because because he preceded them by at least a generation or two. They were his grandchildren. But Rashi's methodology is really very much that of a Sugya Rishon. I don't know how Rashi would always have Paskin, but in Rashi's Mefarish the Gemara, he takes, I'll call a Gaonic-like approach in that Rashi does not feel the need to reconcile Sugyas most of the time. And if the truth is, Rashi as a commentary almost never says enough to reconcile, but once in a blue moon, Rashi will act like a Bal HaTosfos, like he just did and saw him, and he will cross-reference another sugya. But when you see a contradiction in Rashi between two sugyas, the first question you have to ask yourself is not whether it's a contradiction within Rashi, but whether it's a contradiction between the two Gemaras, and Rashi is just explaining each sugya kipshuta. So here Rashi does take a riff-like approach, certainly not the approach his Einik Lach would eventually take. Now, the riff writes the following. First, he just quotes it in. Amar Rav, Basar Shchuta Shamein, Shetzlo, and Basar Nevela Kachush, Osir. The Ozil Hai, Umefatim Leila Haich, Vahadar Heich, Umefatim Leila Hai. That's just a straight quotation of the Gemara. Rav says it's a problem even when the kosher meat is the juicy meat, because they juice each other up and they exchange flavors. The Levi Amar Afilu Basar Shchuta Kachush, Shetzlo, and Basar Nevela Shamein, non-kosher meat is the juicy meat, mutar. Why? Because reich alav milsahi, reich doesn't count. However, whatever formulation you understand in that, avad levi uvda beresh galusa, begdi v'davar acher. Levi once had a shayla in the resh galusa where the servants probably cooked pork and kosher meat in the same oven, and Levi paskin, the kosher meat was still kosher. The riff writes, and now he's adding, ha milsa pasku baravasa kelevi. Our teachers, the Gaonim, paskin like Levi. V'siyua lemilsa, and they brought proof to this matter, mehech de garsinan b'perak ha-socher es-apoel, from that which we find in the sugya in Avodah Zarah, le'inyan bastiha, oveit kochavim li'Yisrael shapir dami, a guy can smell the Jews, Yisrael oveit kochavim, abaye amar aser, v'rava amar mutar. V'abaye amar aser, recha milsahi, v'rava amar mutar, recha la milsahi. Now, just as an aside note, we haven't read the Gemara yet, but something that I mentioned in the past, theoretically speaking, we don't actually know what Rav and Abaye held. We know what their position was, but we don't know why they held it. I have to go back and check, but the way the Rif quotes the Gemara, Abaye says Asar, Rav says Mutar, Abaye says Asar, Recha Milsahi, Rav says Mutar, Recha Milsahi, it's not Abaye and Rav talking, Recha Milsa, Recha Milsa. That's the Sugya explaining Abaye and Rav. Which, by the way, would provide, ironically, even more support for the Rif's and the Gaon's position, because it's not just that Rav and Abaye held that way, it's the Gemara chose to interpret them that way, as opposed to interpret them in a different way. And I'm not suggesting, by the way, that they held something else, but the Balei HaTosos almost will.
Also, the case is not one where the Recha is entering food. It's just entering his nose.
So, Sam, you're already walking down the path of arguing that there are different kinds of Reach, which makes it even more significant that the Gemara, it's not Abaye and Rava who use the terms Recha Melsi, Recha La Melsahi, but the Gemara has chosen to describe it in those terms, and we'll talk about why that could matter, at least for Tosfos.
In the Gemara Kulin, it only mentions Recha La
Melsa. You mean in Pesachim? Which?
Pesachim.
Yeah, the riff, by the way, happens to be in Chulin. It's in neither Masechta, but yeah.
But it's, it only mentions Recha Lav Milsa in terms of the explanation. Right? At all.
You're correct. It doesn't mention Recha Milsa in Rav's words.
Right.
And even the truth is the explanation given for Levi as well is not necessarily Levi's words. My time, Recha Balmahi, Recha Lav Milsa is not Levi speaking. That's correct. Okay. So the Rif says, "V'kaimalon kol hecha de pli yerbaiv harava de hilchasa kerava bar miyal kagam the chayvan de hilchasa kerava b'had reicha la milsahi." Since we paskin in Avodah Zarah by the case of bastiha that reach doesn't count, mimela by default shamina mine de hilchasa kalevi. Obviously, you know that you paskin like Levi as well. The koi kerava, so that he holds like Rava. Hadein hu svara de kamoi. This was the explanation offered by our predecessors. But then he says in letter gimel as follows. V'ika man de palig bahamilsa. There are those who disagree on this matter. V'amar de hilchasa kivase de rav behai. That here we paskin like Rav. Now, when he says here we paskin like Rav, he doesn't mean by bastia. Nobody's going to say that we paskin like Abaye. But he's saying that in the sugya imtzachim, there we paskin like Rav. Now, why? So number one, these numbers, by the way, these are all my numbers. Okay, but I've broken this down so it should be much easier to see. Number one, the Hamistabra Taima. Rav's reason would appear to be correct. Mehadatanya Haroda Paschama Unisana al Pichavis. If someone removes bread from the oven, hot, puts it on top of a barrel shall yayin, shall truma, Rabbi Meir Oser and Rabbi Yehuda Mater, and Rabbi Yose Mater Bishalchitim Oso Bishel Saorim, Mimnesha Hasorim Shoavos. That was the Mishnah that we mentioned before. And then if Amar Rishim and Lakish, Reish Lakish qualified the Mishnah, but Paschama Vichavis Pesucha Kulei Alma Lepligi de Aser. Whenever the bread is hot and the barrel is open, everybody agrees it's Aser because the Reach gets in. Vahai Basar Shchuta Shetzlo and Basar Nevela. This is still a quote of the Gemara. And when you cook Basar Shchuta with Basar Nevela, it is the equivalent of Kipaschama Vichavis Psucha Damia. So, in other words, the Mishnah, the reading of the Mishnah, as Reish Lakish explains it, supports Rav's position. It supports Rav's position. V'od, secondly, the Hatani Rav Kahana Bar Chanina Saba, pas. This was the two Amoraim at the end of the sugya. Pas Shafa Imatzli Asur LaOchla Bekutach. Bread that you cook with meat in an oven, you're not allowed to eat the bread with milk. The ahi binisa, the fish, itavya bahade bisra, it was roasted in the same oven as meat. The asara rava mi parzikya lemechla bekutcha. And Rava Miparzikya prohibited eating it with milk. De Alma, from this we see Kirav Sfirulai. Now, I won't comment on the second one. The Rif is going to respond to these two proofs. But I want to comment that there's a real problem with the first one, which I don't think the Rif himself points out. If you, in other words, the first proof, the two proofs for Rav were, number one, the Mishnah and Trumos that talks about the bread and the wine. And, now remember, the Gemara initially said it's really a machlokas in the Mishnah. Rav Meir says Recha Milsa, Rav Yehuda says Recha Lav Milsa. That's how it started out. Reish Lakish made a new Kimta where he said, nah, everybody holds like Rav, could hold like Rav. Now, let's grant that that's a reasonable proof for a moment that we should really pass like Rav. But here's the problem. That exact same discussion takes place in Avodah Zarah, and if that provides support for Rav, then it also should provide support for Paschini like Abaye, that nobody wants to say. Right? So you know that there's something wrong with the proof, because otherwise you'd have to Paschini like Abaye also, because it's the same exact Shach Levitaria. We'll read it in Avodah Zarah eventually. The exact same Lema Kitanoi, Ramir versus Rabbi Huda. Rava will say, yes, it's a Tanaya. Abaye would say, no, really, everybody holds like me. The exact same Shach Levitaria. So if it's a proof that we Paschini like Rav, then it's a proof we Paschini like Abaye, and we don't Paschini like Abaye. The second proof we mentioned earlier, which is not an unreasonable proof, it seems to be, in fact, an excellent proof on the surface, that the later Amoraim, one is quoting a Braisa and one is actually a Maisa Rav, was actually Paschini that meat cooked with other stuff in the oven makes the stuff, you know, fleshic equipment, if you want to call it that. You can't eat it with milk. So that seems to be a pretty good proof. So the Rif writes, Dalit, he's got to respond. Anan lo istabra lan. This is not mistab. This does not make sense. This is not compelling. Ella ki de pasku kamaizal. We should. What is correct is what the earlier authorities paskin. Vahani rayos de dachu buhu lepiska de kamoi islu de chiosa. These proofs that they use to push aside the psak of the earlier ones, they can be pushed aside. They have the chios. We have ways of defeating them. Number one. Dehar the Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, lo hav yiraya lemidche lahad the Levi v'Rava. So the Rif realizes that the proof from Rabbi Shimon Lakish, the way he read the Mishnah and Trumos, is not only a problem for Rav, it's a problem for Levi, it's a problem for Rava as well. So he said, that's not a problem. Why? Number one, the Levi Rabbe have a legabe Rabbi Shimon Lakish. Revi was considered a Rebbe with respect to Rabbi Shimon Lakish. Levi was a contemporary, I think, was a generation ahead of Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Levi was a very close Talmud of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. And Rabbi Yochanan was old enough to have seen Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, but he was very young. So Levi is considered a Rebbe, legabe Reish Lakish. Velo havya memri, the Reish Lakish, kusha led the Levi. Therefore, if Levi didn't choose to read the Mishnah and Trumos that way, he can ignore Levi's Rabbi Shimon Lakish's reading of the Mishnah. The Rava, the Rava Nami who Basra Holo Suri Lahai the Rabbi Shimon Lakish. This is kind of a little bit circular. We have a principle, Hilchasa Kivasroi. That's why we paskin like the Talmud Bavli's Maskana against anything the Amoraim said. It's why we paskin like the Amoraim's interpretation of the Tanaim. It's why we generally, even though the Talmud Bavli is absolutely binding, we generally give more weight to latter-day authorities. Now, latter-day authorities today may be reluctant to argue on Rishonim when they have no one to support them, but in principle, Hilchasa Kivasroi. So he says that that if Rava rejected Levi, then we should follow the Basrai. Now, of course, you realize here that this, on the surface, looks like the Rif is playing a game. If someone is earlier than Reish Lakish, so the Rif will say, oh, he's like his Rebbe. And if he's later than Reish Lakish, he'll say, Hilchasak Basrai. Now, the Rif doesn't state this explicitly here, and I don't know if he addresses it anywhere else. But in general, there is a contradiction in terms of the rules of Psak, where on the one hand we say, that ein halacha ketalmud b'makom harav, you don't paskin like the student when his rebbe disagrees. On the other hand, hilchasa kevasroi, we paskin like the latter day authorities, and a talmud by definition is always after the rebbe. So the rishonim suggest, I think a kedushin, there's a tosus and a ran, it's a ran there, who says that up until the generation of Rav and Abaye, we apply the rule in halacha ketalmud b'makom harav. From Rav and Abaye on, where we rule hilchasa kevasroi. Now this riff. So if you accept that principle, whatever the reason should be behind that, then the Rif fits perfectly in line with that, right? In other words, with respect to Reish Lakish, who is a second generation Eretz Yisrael Amora, you know, a generation to two before Rav and Abaye, Reish Shimon Lakish and Levi, who's probably not his Rebbe directly, but, you know, he precedes him, so Levi doesn't have to hold Reish Lakish, so we can ignore Reish Lakish. Now, with respect to Reish Lakish and Rava, well, Hilchasak Basrai, Rava's a Basrai, therefore we should pass him like Rava. So that's how the Rif dismisses that. So Hilchach, Kad Misalkus Lahaimema the Reish Lakish Mehacha, once you remove Reish Lakish's interpretation and Ukimta and the Mishnah from our Sugya, Koi Rav Karabi Meir, Velevi Karabi Huda. Then, Rav Meir said that a non-Kohen can't eat the bread. And Rabbi Huda said he can. And if you have a Machlokus, Rav Meir Rabbi Huda, Vakaimon the Rav Meir Rabbi Huda, Allah Karabi Huda. The Gemara in Erev in Daf Edim Mvav has a hierarchy of the four major Tanoim of Usha. Rav Meir, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Huda, and Rabbi Yose. And they say that Rabbi Yose, we always paskin like Rabbi Yose, we don't always, but almost always paskin like Rabbi Yose, even when he's against the majority. Halach alacha krabi Yose mechave Rav. Why? Because nimuka imo, his svara, his logic was always so solid. Rabbi Meir, we almost never paskin like, which is also not exactly true. The Gemara earlier in Avrin says, Rabbi Meir, where Rav Shecht always likes to say, he was a super genius, and he could explain things both ways, and nobody could tell when he was right, so they just couldn't paskin like him. The Gemara there says he had a Talmud Tzumchus, who could give, on every halacha, he had 49 reasons latahir, and 49 reasons latame. So anyway, whatever the reasons are, Rabbi Meir is at the bottom, and in between, Rabbi Shimon is second from the bottom, Rabbi Huda second from the top. So the order of Psak, generally, again, I know this is more complicated because we usually paskin like a Stam Mishnah, as Rabbi Yochanan says, and we know that Rabbi, when he chose to anonymize the Mishnayas, which of his Rabbeim's opinion did he typically choose to place in there? Rabbi Meir, Stam Mishnah, Rabbi Meir. So you have to reconcile some of these principles, but the Gemara in Erevin says it goes Rabbi Yose, then Rabbi Yehuda, then Rabbi Shimon, Bar Yochai, and then Rabbi Meir. So the Rif says that Kaimalan, the Rabbi Yehuda, Allah, Rabbi Yehuda. And since Rabbi Yehuda is the one who says that the bread is mutter, so that paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, therefore we paskin like Levi as well, and like Rava. Okay, so the truth is the Rif was able to solve this problem. The question would still remain for the person who's pushing back on the Rif, that he quotes at the beginning of Letter Gimel, what does that position hold, Lagabe Abaye and Rava? In other words, you want to paskin like Rav based upon your proofs. Are you also going to really paskin like Abaye? Okay. Anyway, so that's how the Rif pushes aside the proof. Even if that person did, if the person didn't want to paskin like Abaye, then they were being inconsistent. If they did want to paskin like Abaye, the Rif has just demonstrated why it's not a proof. Comment number two. Velo od. Ella. Now we mentioned two authorities in that Mishnah who argue, Rav Meir, Rabbi Yehuda. But we mentioned a third authority also, who would trump both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir, which is Rabbi Yose, who says that by barley it's aser because they're shoavos. So really, we should paskin like Rabbi Yose, and what is his opinion with respect to Recha? So the Rif says, "V'lo od, ella de Rabbi Yose nami le'inyan Recha ki Rabbi Yehuda sfirale." Rabbi Yose agrees with Rabbi Yehuda on the issue of Recha. Why? The low pligi Rabbi Yose aled Rabbi Yehuda ela b'saorim et neisha asorim shoavos gufo shal yayin v'lav reichahi. So now, this may not be the only way to interpret Rabbi Yosei, but the way the Rif understands it, Rabbi Yosei agrees with Rabbi Yehuda, Reich Halam El Sehi, but if it's literally absorbing, barley is more absorbent, and it absorbs the goof of the ayin, that's not Reich anymore. So, but you see from Rabbi Yosei's Shita, that if not that for the fact that it were absorbing the goof of the ayin, if it were just the Reich, he would agree with Rabbi Yehuda's position. So now, not only is it Rabbi Yehuda against Rabbi Meir, it's two against one, and it has the one on the side of the two. You know, it's like, you know, putting, you know, Larry and I have a one-on-one, and he puts LeBron James on his team. Right? So, So LeBron James against the two of us would win, but certainly if you put the two of them together against me, I have no shot. So that's what's going on here. So Rabbi Yosei Paskin's that way. Again, it's not explicit Rabbi Yosei else that way, but that's the way the Rif reads Rabbi Yosei, in which case Rabbi Yosei, Rabbi Yehuda against Rabbi Meir, Meir's done for. So Avo Bechitib, by wheat, She'enam Shavos, that don't absorb the goof of the ayin, Ki Rabbi Yehuda Srirelei, the Rechala Milsa. He would hold like Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore, on top of Rabbi Yehuda against Rabbi Meir, we have Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yosei against Rabbi Meir. Three, the ode. Now, notice, by the way, this wasn't responding to one of the two proofs. This was just another proof for the Rif side. As is true with number three, the ode. That brisa, which was the first brisa that the Gemara had on Psachim, trying to prove that Levi was right from not roasting two Psachim in the same oven. So the Gemara gives an answer for Rav, but the easier reading in that brisa, as we saw it, was like Levi. So the Rif says that brisa is Kalevi Daika. The Rav Rav had to edit the brisa and to fix it up in order to make it work with his opinion. It's forced the answer, and therefore it's easier, much simpler to read that brisa like Levi, and then all is good for Levi. And finally, four, which is the one that's actually the most interesting and the one that's most significant halacha lemaisa. I'm sorry. It's not yet here. It's the net. Hey, he's going to deal with that. But let me ask you. So let me read the fourth one, and then I want to ask you a question, a thought question. The ode. The chi daikis lememra the rav mashkachas le the shayach bahu memra delay the amar bahadein pirka rav ukim amora ala avidarish. Okay, so I got to step back, explain one thing here. There is a machlokas that we've encountered previously, whether min bimino, two things, for now I'm just going to say with the same taste, two of the same species, whether you can ever have bittel. In other words, if I have a kazayis of ground beef, which is not kosher, that gets mixed into 60 kazayisim, 100 kazayisim of kosher ground beef, do we apply the rules of bittel? Now the answer is we do. But there was a machlokas Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim, as the Gemara explained it, whether or not there ever is bittul from min bimino. We spent some time explaining the concept behind it. If bittul is about a clash between two substances and having to say we now either have A or we have B, then if your meat that gets mixed into meat, it's all meat, kosher meat, non-kosher meat, but the non-kosher meat is still there. That was the position of Rabbi Yehuda, the way the Gemara explains it. It's not explicit, but it's based upon a mission that the Rif's going to refer to here. And it is explicitly the position of Rav and Shmuel against Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. Rav and Shmuel, we will learn this, it's in a couple of blot. Rav and Shmuel explicitly state that min bimino never has bittul. Two things, let's say, for the same taste. Two things that taste the same. One is this or one is heter. No matter how much heter you have, it's all aser. So we don't paskin that way, except for Rashi in one place in Shas paskins that way. We don't paskin that way. But Rav definitely holds that opinion. So now, what was Rav's case by the Reich HaMilsi? And this goes back to your question about whether it's bittul and so on. Rav was talking about meat and meat. You roast the non-kosher meat, the basar nevela, with the basar shuta. So the Rif says that even Rav... may only hold what he holds, not because Reich HaMilsahi, but because it's min bimino. Granted, it's less than shishim, but it's still a kol shehu because it's meat and meat. And I'm going to read the Rif. There are problems with this, I think, suggestion, at least in the sugyim sachim. I might point out one, but let's read what. But that's what the Rif is going to say. So now we can see his words. V'od Dechi daikis lemeimra, lemeimre derav. If you analyze Rav's Memra carefully, Mashkachasle, it turns out, the Shayach Bahu Memra delay, it is relevant to a different Memra of his, the Amar Badein Perka, that he says in our Perak in Hulin, where the Rif is. Okim Rav Amora Alev Adarish, Rav got up, Rav spoke, he had his microphone, his Amora, who projected what he had to say and told him, say the following. Kevan shenasantam bechaticha chaticha atzmanas nesevela voseres kol chatichos kulan. I don't want to explain what that means now. We might encounter this later. But Vamrinan, and the Gemara says about Rav's drasha, michtei Rav keman amara l'shmaite, whose opinion was Rav following? Ki Rabbi Yehuda the amar min bemino lo batel the amar of Yehuda ein dam evatel dam. So the Gemara says that Rav, when he paskin, whatever he paskin there, it's not relevant to us, was following Rabbi Yehuda's position that there's no bittul for two of the same flavored substances. But the Chachamim, the Rabbanon pliya the Rabbi Yehuda, the Rabbanon disagree with Rabbi Yehuda, the Kaimalon, the Chol Isurin Shebetorah B'Shishim, we apply bittul with 60 even when it's the same min, same species, same flavor, the Afilu Nisare Gufo Shel Isur B'Davar Shel Heter, even if actually, not just the Reach, if a piece of the meat, of the treif meat, got mixed in with the kosher meat, we apply bittel if there's shishim. The kosher kain may recha ba'alma de lo asrinan lay. Certainly, if it's only recha. Because that's less than 160. Now this suggests, by the way, that recha is something, but it's bottle. Which would mean that for Pesach purposes, where there's no bittel, it would be a problem. Now, so the Rif is suggesting, and this is a radical suggestion, and I'll point out one reason why I think it's very difficult in the Gemara Pesachim, that Rav's whole position in the Sugya Pesachim is predicated on his other position, which has been Mimino is not Batel. But since we don't paskin that way, as Rav would agree that if Mimino would be Batel, there would be Bittel there. Rav would agree that Reach is less than 160th. The only problem I have with it is that the Gemara tells a story about Levi. I mean, the problem is later in the Sugya too. But immediately, what was the story that Levi, what was Levi's halacha l'maisa? The radical case. Could you imagine if the rabbi, if Rabbi Steinmetz, Rabbi Lookstein, Rabbi Weinstock, any other rabbis here got a call from the bathroom, Rabbi, I have a problem. I accidentally cooked pork chops and meat in the oven. What do I do? I'm imagining that nobody would call with that shayla. You're probably too embarrassed. You take the stuff and throw it out. Okay, like, what were you doing with pork chops there? But Levi had that story. So let me ask you a question. What would Rav hold? What's that?
What was he doing with pork chops?
No, that I explained last time. It's probably the Avadim in the Reish Galusa's house because they were friar. If they were even Jewish, they were unsavory characters. No surprise. If they were technically Jewish, they were eating treif anyway. Who knows? So the question is, what would Rav have paskin in the story in the Beis Reish Galusa, according to this last claim of the Rif? If you had pork chops and meat in the oven, what would Rav have paskin? What do you think? If the Rif is correct, what would the Rav have paskin?
It's
Bata B'Shishim. That it's mutter, correct. Because it's not mimimino anymore. It's not meat and meat, it's pork and meat. Two different tastes. So the Gemara is presented that Levi Avar Uvda as if this was Levi Lishitaso. Whereas if the Rif is correct in his fourth Taina, Rav would have agreed with that as well. It's not just Levi's position. Rav could have given the exact same psak. Okay.
Not for the same.
No. Bittul B'Shishim.
That's different than Recha.
But the argument of Recha, the way the Rif is claiming this last line, is that the argument that Recha is not an argument that Recha, it's really an argument about whether or not there is whether or not Mimimino is Batel. There might be ways of trying to answer this question, but I'm going to leave this aside for the moment because this is not a central proof of the Rif. If you eliminate it, this is like almost a pilpul, what the Rif says, connecting Rav's two seemingly unrelated positions. Even if you set this aside, the Rif has dealt sufficiently with the first question of the two, namely, what do you do with the Mishnah in Trumos, where Reish Lakish says, all the Tanaim really hold like Rav, and hold like Abaye. How do you deal with that? So the Rif has dealt with that by explaining we ignore Reish Lakish. And he's quoted sort of two other proofs, which I don't think we're going to quibble with. And then the last one, which I think one could quibble with. But okay. So now, there's still one question that's outstanding against the Rif's position, against his Rabbeim's Psak, which is the stories at the end of the Gemara, that they wouldn't let the bread roasted with meat be eaten with milk, they wouldn't let the fish roasted with meat be eaten with milk, or maybe anything else. So you see that Recha is Milsahi according to that Brisa and that Amora. So what do you do with that? And that's the end of the Sugya. That sounds like the Gemara's effect paskinin. So the Rif writes in Hay, and this is the last part of the Rif. V'hadetani Rav Kahana pas sha'afai matzli asur la'ochla b'kutach. V'ahi binisa di'itavya b'hadei bisra v'asara rava b'parzikya l'meich la'b'kutcha. Those two stories. Okay, one wouldn't let the bread be eaten with the milk, and the other wouldn't let the fish be eaten with the milk. Lav kirav asri bilchud, ela afilu kalevi asiri lemechlenu bikotcha. It's not only according to Rav, even according to Levi, you can't eat it. Now the Rif is going to go on to explain and give a couple of reasons. But methodologically speaking, you see what the Rif has done immediately. He's basically said, those two stories look like they're Rav's opinion, but they're not only Rav's opinion. Even Levi would be moda. And if Levi would agree, if he would be moda to those two stories, then the entire proof evaporates. Now, the question, of course, is, why would Levi agree? Reicha la bilsehi. So the Rif is going to suggest two things. Number one, the chevan deshari lemechlenu b'lo kotcha. If you once it's permitted to eat it without, not with milk, then isharis lehu lemechlenu bekutcha ishtakach keman deshari leitavuye bis basar shchuta b'hade basar nevela lechatchila. The Rif says that if you allow it now, what is the status of the bread? Before we talk about eating it, fleishiks milchiks, is the bread permissible in eating or not permissible in eating? After you roast it in the oven with meat. You're allowed to eat it. You're not allowed to make fleishik bread is also to eat. If you actually mix meat into, unless it's not bread, but it's a bereka or something like that, it's a different story. But if you, let's say you use meat, I actually heard in a tasting test on the Shuk, I wasn't there, but my members of my family were, some place in the Shuk makes rugelach with beef tallow. Apparently, tastes phenomenal. I'll have to find out for you. I got to ask them where they got it. Right now, if it was straight bread, it would be a problem. I guess because it's a pastry, so it's not bread. It's not eaten with every bread chazal will frame it. You cannot milchik bread is also fleishik bread is also milk. I mean, with milk ingredients and meat ingredients. The reason the Gemara prohibited it was because bread was eaten every meal, and we were afraid that you would eat it with the wrong thing, and therefore they prohibited making and eating. And you can make it if you're not going to eat it, but you're not allowed to eat. Really, fleishik bread or milchik bread?
And in Israel today, it's not allowed to be called bread if it has fleishik or milk.
Okay. So that would make sense. But we assume that Gemara says it's only mutar under two circumstances. One, this is the last simen in Basar B'chalav in Yerodet, simen Tzadi Zayin. Either the way Rashi, you make a very small amount, or if you make it in a distinct shape. So anything that's not, in other words, a bereka is okay because it's not, nobody thinks it's bread. A pastry is not bread that's eaten, it looks different and so on. It's understood to be different. But if you had bread that was made with butter or bread made with beef tallow, it's usher to eat, actually. So this is not fleishik bread. This is bread and meat that were roasted in the same oven. So we don't say it's usher to eat. But the Rish says the following. He says, you're allowed to eat the bread right now. If you now go ahead and eat this bread with milk, it's like now you're lechatchila taking advantage of Recha. Which, by the way, leads to a crazy factual psak, which is, it's more problematic to eat if you cook the bread with pork in the oven, you could eat the bread however you liked. Because Recha la milsehi b'di'eved. But if you cook it with meat, or either way, it could be other milk, you can't eat it with the other thing because that's called the chatchila. That's pretty wild. But that's what the Rish says. He says that now to eat the bread that was cooked with the fleishik stuff, now to eat it with milk would be like mixing the reach of the meat with the milk now. If you cook the milk and the meat in the same oven together, you can eat both, no problem. Obviously not together. But you cook the bread with the meat, so now you can't eat the bread with milk because that would be like me mixing it together lechatchila. And he says, and he's assuming like Rashi as well, V'levi lo kashari hachin ela di'eved, ha'levi she'tzla'oka amar v'lo amar tzolin l'chatchila. So this last comment to the Rif is his proof that Levi shita is only b'di'eved, because Levi doesn't say tzolin basar, in nevelam shkuta. He says, talks about tzla'o. That is not in itself such a compelling proof, by the way. The reason why he would say tzla'o is because Rav said tzla'o, and Rav is talking about b'di'eved it's also. So Levi uses the same language. The bottom line, whether you like the proof or not, the Rif, like Rashi, and obviously the Gaona before the Rif, held that Recha la milsehi b'di'eved, not lechatchila. Right? No, assuming that the oven meet the criteria, no one says that you're allowed to cook meat and milk in the oven under certain circumstances together at the same time. In fact, Rav Schechter's position, which is really the Shulchan Aruch's position, that you don't need two separate ovens, but he says you have to let the oven cool down in between. I would say you just have to let the oven air out if you want to do that. If it's safe to leave the door open for a few minutes. He says, it wouldn't make the food treif if you don't wait in between. It's just that there's still recha in the oven. And therefore, reichas milsahi lechatchila, but not b'di'evet. So that's why he says you can use the same oven. You just let it cool down in between, and then you can switch to the other min. But that's based upon the assumption that we paskin like Levi, but Levi is only b'di'evet, not lechatchila. So that's what the Rif. That's reason number one. The Rif says that Levi would agree with that brisa and with Rabbi Miparzikya that if you cook meat with either fish or bread in the oven, you're not only allowed to eat the other things with milk. Why? Because now eating it with milk would be considered lechatchila, and Levi only permitted by the Avin. Okay, then he quotes one more suggestion. V'od, and this is even wilder, and we have actually spoken about this before. V'od, the high pascha afar matzli. This bread which you roasted, that you baked with the meat, kevan desharia b'lchud b'lo kotcha. Since it is permitted to eat right now without milk, havi le kedavar sheyesh lamatirin. And this is actually wild, and I'll explain why in a second. Let me first tell you what he says. We have spoken before on a number of occasions, but I promised I would review, and we will review again because there are other pieces of this, that normally we apply the rules of Bittul that we apply. But let's say, to take the Gemara's example, a chicken lays an egg on Yom Tov, and you're not allowed with the Rabbanon to eat that egg until after Yom Tov. Let's say that egg gets mixed into 60 other eggs. You make one very large frittata or omelet on Yom Tov, and you use 61 eggs, 62 just to be safe, so in case the egg was slightly bigger, as the Gemara would say. And now somebody realizes that one of those eggs was laid by the chicken today. So the Gemara says you're not allowed to eat the food. There's no bittul. Why? Because it's a davar sheyesh lo matirin. Wait until after Yom Tov, and you can eat it then without having to rely upon bittul. So the Rif says here that the very same thing is true here. Since you can eat the bread now, not with milk, so therefore the reyach of the basar is not batel because it's a davar sheyesh lo matirin. That's what the Rif says. And he says explicitly here, he says, v'chol davar shu echad be'elef is kerecha ba'almahu, v'afilu be'elef lo batel. Ho'ovi yesh lo matirin. So the Rif says that something that has less than 1,000th of the isser and the heter is no less than Recha is, which implies that Recha is kind of, it's less than Shishim, and nonetheless, you're not allowed to eat it by Davar Sheyesh Lo Matirin. So Recha by Davar Sheyesh Lo Matirin is also, doesn't have Bittul, V'hai Pasnami Hachanhu, and bread is like a Davar Sheyesh Lo Matirin, but V'lav Mishun Desiro Lan Kirav. It's not that we hold like Rav. No, these last two stories of the Gemara also are like Levi. So let me just close by explaining, and then review for a minute just what we've done, but explaining what the problem with the Rif is. Davar sheyesh lo matirin means that which I can benefit from later, if I wait, so I can't benefit from now. If you were to tell me that tomorrow I could now eat this bread with milk, that would be called a davar sheyesh lo matirin. In other words, it would be usser today, and mutter tomorrow. Davar sheyesh lo matirin means something is prohibited now that later becomes prohibited. Permitted. This is not a davar sheyesh lo matirin. Are you allowed to eat it without milk now? Yes. Are you allowed to eat it with milk now? No. Tomorrow, are you allowed to eat it without milk? Yes. Are you allowed to eat it with milk? No. Nothing becomes mutter here. Nothing. There's not a davar sheyesh lo matirin. So we've spoken about this in the context of that Ran. At some point, the Ran and the Dharam that we spoke about at length, and I will at some point revisit that Ran. But this is the difficulty with this answer of the Rif. That's the difficulty with this answer. Either way, whether you like this answer or not, so the Rif's position and the position of the Gaonim and Rashi is that fundamentally we have two sugyos that, in effect, line up with one another. That Rav and Levi line up with Rava and Abaye, and Abaye and Rava. And since we know that we paskin like Rava, and you have to adopt, they assume, the exact same position in both sugyos with respect to Recha Milsa, or Recha La Milsahi, therefore you have to paskin like Levi against Rav. The only pressing issue to determine is whether you agree with the Rif on his last point for the following reason. One could argue, not like the Rif, one could say that Ein Hachanami, the last two Maimras in Psachim, are actually following Rav's opinion, and therefore we, who do not paskin like Rav, do not follow those two opinions either. The Rif, of course, and we do paskin this way in Shulchan Aruch, says no. Says that those two opinions can work even within Levi's position of Recha Lav Milsahi, and we paskin like Levi, but we also paskin like Maaseh Rav at the end of the Gemara, and that's in fact how the Shulchan Aruch paskins. The Shulchan Aruch will paskin, at least when it comes to the bread, they paskin like the Rif, saying that even Levi would agree. When it comes to Recha Milsa, Recha Lav Milsahi, so we'll talk about that. We really paskin Recha Lav Milsahi. There's what to talk about in that context, but bottom line is, no matter which way you would paskin there, we do happen to paskin that if you roast something in the oven with milchiks or with fleishiks, subject to certain criteria, you would not be able to eat it later with the other kind. Okay. So anyway, next week, God willing, we will now explore the Baalei HaTosfos, who take a completely different approach to dealing with the two sugyos. So you can see where we're going with this. I won't keep you waiting, in suspense. Obviously, they're going to paskin like Rav, and they're going to paskin like Rava. They're going to somehow thread the needle to split it, even though it would seem from the Gemara that it's got to be one or the other. But that, God willing, next week.